You're listening to Career Chats with Phil Ray Smith, brought to you by Michael Page.
Hello and welcome to the Career Chats podcast, brought to you by recruitment experts Michael Page. I'm Phil Ray Smith. This is the latest episode in a series in which we'll be talking to a number of fascinating and out of the ordinary people, I mean that in a good way, about how they made it and the life or career lessons they learned along the way. Each week, we'll be touching on a different skill and how you or I could learn from it. Today's guest is going to talk about thinking outside the box. Catch the Career Chats podcast on the Michael Page website and on Audioboom, Spotify and iTunes. To make sure you get the next episode as soon as it's available, why not subscribe to Career Chats by hitting the subscribe button in your player. Today's celebrity career advisor was expelled from school at 15, but was earning £38,000 a year by the time he was 19. He set up his own plumbing and boiler business, and he won fame when he competed in the 11th series of The Apprentice in 2015 and went on to win it. Since then, he's written books, created a podcast, set up a mentoring foundation, and been named one of Forbes magazine's 30 Under 30. He is Joseph Valente. Hello.
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Good.
Thank you very
Welcome.
Much for the introduction. That was fantastic.
So did you always know that you wanted to be a business big shot?
I think from a very early age, I understood that if I wanted something in life, I was going to have to take it. We came from quite an underprivileged background, and I think that gave me the drive and ambition to want to achieve and become the best.
Well, you mentioned you had a bit of a rags-to-riches story, you know, issues with your father, being expelled from school, as I said. Plenty of knockbacks to have at an early age. So how did you kind of manage to overcome those?
I was very lucky because although my dad didn't work, my mum was very hardworking. She worked three quite basic level jobs, actually. So I saw the hard work element of what was required to keep something together. But I was... I had a figure in my uncle who was a very, very successful businessman who I used to see once or twice a year. He'd come down in a flash suit. He walked into a room with presents. He'd drive the best cars that were available. And I'd always look at him versus my dad and think, how is there these two scopes of people? And why is one... like that, and why is one like the other? And I remember from very early on thinking that that's what I'm going to become, that's what I'm going to go after. And I think a lot of people out there don't get to see how the other half live, I suppose, and because they're not related or they're friends or family, it looks like it's an unachievable destiny for them to be able to work their way towards that. So I think I was privileged in that sense, because he was my uncle, I was able to see that I could also live that type of life.
Great. So I see you have a kind of a role model, a bit of a vision there, but you also had to take very small steps to start off with. You were literally knocking on doors when you to find work to start off with, right?
Yeah, I think my career really started at the age of 7 when I started selling football stickers in the playground. I didn't have money to buy them, so I thought, right, how am I going to make... money and enterprise, really, to buy new packets. So I started selling my swaps, guaranteeing a shiny in some packages, increasing the revenue and the prices. And then I started working as a pot washer at the age of 13 in a local pub. But going into knocking on doors for business, yes, when I was 22 and I first started, I went into it by taking out a £15,000 loan, literally off the cuff. And bought a van, branded it, bought some tools, and literally went knocking on doors of estate agents to try and find work.
The importance of branding there, you got it from an early age, I like that. So we're talking today about thinking outside the box. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's what you do, and perhaps was applying to The Apprentice a good example of doing it?
Yeah, I think thinking outside the box is key, especially in this day and age, because there is so much competition out there, and acting the same as everybody else really does restrict you in terms of getting ahead. So I think for people out there listening to this now and how you should get ahead, it's do what the competition won't do. And the competition can be another candidate applying for the same job. What are they not prepared to do to impress or show their employer they want work? And how are you going to stand out, even if it's marginal? Because sometimes you don't need to reinvent the wheel on this stuff. You just need to be slightly different and you can make a huge impact on a potential employer and or industry.
I love that. So just even being slightly different is a great way of standing out. So that was definitely what you did do with The Apprentice. That was a great way to stand out. But when you joined it, when you went on it and were successfully accepted, did you think you were going to win?
100% yes. And before anybody takes this as arrogance, because I've had this conversation a lot of time, I think with these frontline stories, you need to always understand the source for it to make sense. So the source for this story is, at the age of 22, my mum bought me Lord Sugar's autobiography for Christmas. And I didn't read a book from like year five. Remember, I was expelled at 15 or 14 and, you know, I wasn't interested in learning at all. So I picked up this book between Christmas and New Year. I don't really know why, other than the fact that I was a mad fan of The Apprentice. And I started reading it. And as I was opening the pages and getting further and further in, my mind was just changing. It was incredible. I didn't know what was happening to me, but I was getting this feeling inside that this was my destiny to read this book. And I saw how Lord Sugar came from an underprivileged council estate background in London to be able to come on and achieve to be one of the most successful businessmen in the UK and the world. But I analysed the story, and what I was looking at, I couldn't really find where he was so different to me or anybody else, except for the fact that he worked his arse off and that he got into a product that was booming at the time. But I saw if he could do it, so could I. And that's a reflection on everybody else. Because if these guys can do it, so can you. And that's where the belief system needs to kick in. And because it triggered me to go on and start this business and take out a 15. So I read the book back cover to cover for 3 weeks. And after that, I went straight onto Tesco's home improvement loan. Didn't even have a house at the time. Home improvement loan. 15 grand landed in my bank in 2 days. Bought a van. Branded it, as I said earlier, and Impregas was born. But to act so quickly just off the back of this book, there was literally nothing else. I knew one day that I was going to meet and work with this guy.
Wow. It's often said that ideas are 10 of plenty, but it's the doing that actually makes a difference. And that was a great example of that. So do you think that's one of the skills that stood you in good stead to be successful on the show? Is it that kind of action? Or why did you think you were successful?
Great question, and I think this is a really relevant one for people that are going into interviews. I saw very early on that there was no BS with Lord Sugar. You have to be very careful about overstating your position, faking who you are, you know, and there's nothing wrong with owning your strengths, but owning your weaknesses as well, because I think that actually makes you stronger. So going into an interview and actually being who you are and owning who you are, and as an MD of a company now that has 60 plus people, I respect and look for that as a great quality. So I was very straight down the line. I would always admit my mistakes in the task up front, hit them head on, because then what's anyone got against you if you can hit something head on? If you put your weakness out there, they've got nothing to call you on. But I was also very confident in also showing my successes.
And even just to get on the show, I mean, the auditions are notoriously very challenging, and the show had been running for 10 seasons already. Did you have to show originality, or what? How did you get the attention of the show's producers, do you think?
So I think when you're applying for something like that, you need to understand all of the key elements and what they're looking for. So really, you know, I knew what the producers would be looking for initially, just like hopefully people can take this back and they can look at what their potential employers will be looking for. So I knew they're going to want somebody that was strong, that was a character, that looked a certain way, that would potentially make good television, had hopefully they saw credibility in what I was saying, had a proven track record. But did I make big statements at that time? Yes, because I understood my environment and I knew they needed something to see me, right? So saying that I was the godfather of business at the age of 25 was a ridiculous statement to make, but it was a statement that was required to get you noticed, right? So people think that, oh, who are these guys making these statements? Actually, I'm a lot smarter because I know how to play the game. Yeah, so it's about giving these people what they want to see. Yeah?
Makes sense. So talking of playing the game, of course, with The Apprentice, you have to be very secretive about your participation. Mm-hmm. And yet you were running a business, Impregas, as you mentioned. So how did you do that? You're not meant to tell anyone. How did you manage to appear on the show leaving your business and without letting it slip to employees.
It was absolutely insane, actually, and it was incredibly hard. And this is where I'm a big risk taker, a very big risk taker. And I believe if you want to get, I want to be a billionaire, if you want to get to these levels, you have to take huge, huge risk, but you always measure the risk against the reward. So at the time, I was 25. I had a company that had 7 people employed in it. We were doing $500,000 in sales a year. We were contracting for about 3,000 homes. And I was the main man, right? And my phone rang nonstop every day. And you're only allowed to tell 4 people, and you have to go away for 9 weeks, and you have to disappear off the face of the earth. So for me to go on The Apprentice basically meant that I put my whole 3 years of business at risk, because I literally disappeared on the Sunday night. I emailed all of my clients, these estate agents, saying that my auntie in Italy had become very ill. She lives on a goat farm. There's no signal. There's no Wi-Fi. And that was my excuse. And I was very lucky to have a part-time lady called Deborah Burns, I have to credit her because she's an amazing woman, that worked for me part-time. And I said to her, listen, Debbie, she was one of the people I told, can you step up and run my business? She was 55 at the time. Can you do it for me? This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And she sat on the other side of the table and said, of course I will. I know you're going to win. And, you know, I was very lucky. And I came back after 9 weeks with zero contact. My business was still alive. She'd kept it running. And, you know, I'd got the reward that I wanted at the end of it. So it's absolutely incredible.
And with your background, running a business that, as you say, is gas, plumbing, how did that translate to kind of the tasks that you had to do on the program? I think it was, you know, selling children's books, selling healthy snacks, all quite diverse. Mm-hmm. Were you able to map your skills across?
Yeah, I think a lot of people start a business because they're good at the job. Plumber starts a plumbing business, hairdresser starts a hairdressing business. But I always started I started as an engineer in this business, but now I'm a businessman and I understand finance, operations, HR, sales, marketing, and I learned all of those elements to a point. But, you know, regardless of the product, I think that business people are entrepreneurial and they need to be able to adapt and be dynamic and go into any situation that works for them. But one asset that I had that a lot of them didn't, because they were coming from just working in employed roles, was the fact that I'd run my business 120 hours a week for the previous 3 years. Insane to grow a business at the start, right? So I'd gone through that brutal hard work, because they, you know, they're killing you on this show at 18 hours a day, almost 7 days a week. So people were dropping like flies because they just couldn't keep up with it. Do you see what I mean? But I was lucky because I was used to the hard work. So my body was able to work on no sleep and stuff like that.
And was there a particular task, when you think back on the show, that showed you at your best?
Yeah, so there was a construction task and I won immunity from being fired, and nobody else had ever done that before, and even though I was on the losing team, and that was my industry, so lucky for me, I showed that I knew how to run a business in that environment, and I think that got me a lot of credibility, and one that I enjoyed. But the one that I'd always wanted to do was the one where you have to go and find the items and you got to get as many. And task three, I was project manager of that, and we had to run a team in France and a team in England, and I won as project manager, and I was absolutely buzzing.
And so, apart from your ability to find things, what do you think made Lord Sugar pick you as winner?
Hopefully that he saw that I was straight talking, hard working. I'd got a proven track record. I was a student of the game, so I admitted of where my weaknesses were and I was willing to learn, but I also was confident enough to own my strengths. And I think it was hopefully a collective of things. You know, I worked very, very hard on that show each time to try and prove myself. So, you know, I feel like maybe that's what he picked up on.
So you were described as cheeky and as well as not polished by some of the other contestants. Did you feel that you had to challenge those perceptions, or were you worried about how you might reflect on your industry more broadly when you're on television?
Yeah, and I think it comes down to, I'll tell you, after I won it, I felt like I had to then become a more polished character than I was. And after about 2 years, I thought, you know what, you got to where you are by being who you are. So why are you trying to change your outlook or how people perceive you to be? And I don't think there's an issue with that, but I am a strong believer now that people should own their identities. In this day and age, transparency is key, and people can see straight through you if you try to be something that you're not. And just because you're not well polished, or just because you don't have a certain academic track record or whatever it is, doesn't mean that you are a weaker individual in terms of being able to become successful. It's a load of nonsense, and it's down to the individual. It's down to what you're prepared to do, how hard you're prepared to work. What you put in is what you will get out. You know, and I strongly believe that people should own who they are and be proud of who they are, and not try and hide anything.
It's that authenticity, isn't it? It really resonates in this day and age. So did you watch the series back afterwards?
Yes, I did, yeah.
And do you think that viewers did see the real you? You're talking about authenticity. Do you think the viewers saw the real you and your skills?
Yeah, I think so. Because at the beginning, I'd made these statements, and Lord Sugar was calling me Valentino and stuff. And I think, you know, I was saying I want to be like Hugh Hefner, I want to be a playboy and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, people took a lot of, at the early times, who's this joker? You know, he's not going to be able to go anywhere and stuff like that. And I think as time went on, and as people saw you perform, then it started to turn itself around in the viewer's eyes, that is.
So do you think that they edited the show to make you feel like seem more like a cheeky chappy, or was that all, that was fine, that was real, was it?
Yeah, I think it's legitimate. I think editing can only go so far. You know, you can only edit the facial, the expressions, or put it into a different, when someone says something, they drop a different scene in, but they can't edit real, authentic character. There's no buffer to that.
What's your verdict at the end of it all? Would you recommend that someone else go on the show?
100%. It was life-changing, absolutely incredible. My business has blown up. It's almost national at the moment. We're aiming for 12 million in sales this year. We've only been doing this new model for 2 years now, from scratch. And, you know, it just opens up a wealth of opportunity, you know, and I recommend it to anybody.
All right. So, I mean, a couple of last questions really about The Apprentice, because I know, obviously, your business now, as you mentioned, is flourishing, and I want to get onto that. But you had $250,000 invested in your business by Lord Sugar as part of winning.
Yeah.
And I think that was the idea, was to kind of grow the business nationally. That bought him 50% of the firm, mm-hmm. and you've since bought him out. Mm-hmm. Why did you do that? And how were you able to convince him that that was the right thing to do?
Okay, so that once again is another outside the box thinking. You know, it was a very risky moment. I was nervous about it. But what I basically took the $250,000. I got the exposure from the TV, and Lord Sugar became my mentor. I got his board and everything else along with it. But what I learned from the whole experience was that getting an investor into your business, it's incredibly important that you choose the right investor. In my naivety as a young man, I believe that Lord Sugar being a billionaire would be the messiah of every business, but you know, I'm not putting him down here, but he didn't understand our construction industry in a field-based service business. He'd never run an industry or a business in that field, so it became relevant. It came very relevant after a while that he didn't know, and they couldn't really advise me on what to do. And I was going to board meetings, you know, saying that this is happening, and because they didn't understand it, I was having to explain everything in so much detail, and it became very demotivating for me. I want to absolutely smash it and take over the world, and I saw their motivation was different. They wanted a small business that works behind the scenes, so each year when he does the show, they can report, oh, this business is doing okay. They didn't want to risk. I want to be number one. You know, I'm not here to take part. I'm here to take over. That's the important thing. And in the early days, he wanted that, and that's how we got to where he got to, but his motivation was different to mine. Now, if I have to keep coming and explaining something every month, and you're not in tune with me, or you're not on the front line, and I can't see you're involved as much, that really turns me off. So I go in one day, and I said to him, look, with all due respect, I thank you for everything that's happened and where we've come around, but I can't see this moving forward. You're not on the front line with me, and if you don't want to be there, please let me take the risk on my own head, because I know that's what you're worried about, and let me buy you out. because I need to take this to number one or I'm just going to turn off.
And did he see your point?
And he said to me, you know what, Joe, no one's ever spoke to me like that before. I will reconsider what your offer and I'll come back to you. And then we negotiated and the deal was done. But I remember at the time being very nervous. You know, you've got to imagine a year and a half, all of the press. Why is Joe buying him out? Why have they split? Is Joe's business a failure? The only one to have ever done it. And at the time, we were 1 million turnovers. So we've grown substantially since then. But, you know, this is where it goes back to each individual, that you must have 100% internal belief in everything that you do. You must have that confidence, because if you don't have the confidence, you're never going to execute. Never rely on anybody else or external opinions to sway or turn you off an idea. And you have to be brave and you have to take these risks. But, you know, these risks do pay off. But it starts with 100% internal belief that you can make it happen.
And how are things with Lord Sugar now? Do you still speak?
To be honest, no, we don't. No, we pretty much cut ties completely after
that. Was the business relationship?
Thing. Yeah, it was done. You know, and you can get emotional about it, or you can say, look, this is business. It's just the way that it works. And, you know, these relationships last for a while. You take the good, you move the bad, and you move on.
So let's talk about how you've moved on. Mm-hmm. Your business has flourished, as you say. What's the turnover now these days?
So the last financial year was 5 million.
5 million.
And we're aiming to 12 in the next.
Great. So that's pretty big growth, double-digit growth, to say the least. What is it that drives you, and how do you think that people can kind of take from your lesson ways to achieve their goals themselves?
So I think everything starts with vision. You have to vision where you want to end up. Begin with the end in mind. What do you want to become? Where do you want to go? And I think that is what should drive your entire you know, working life, personal life, and your existence, really. And then after that, it's about understanding what you're prepared to do to get it. So in the early days, for me, it was about the money. But now, really, it's about becoming the UK's number one boiler installation business within Impregas. It's about becoming an international entrepreneur. You know, and these are the things that drive me. It's the accreditations and the achievements and the fear of maybe never getting there by setting the goal so high is what gets me out of bed every single day.
So let's go back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the apprentice, but I'd like to talk about how you approached apprenticeship. And you basically kind of set out a very unique way of getting experience in the business, right?
Yeah, and you know, this is a real core subject for people that really don't feel, I suppose, at the beginning they have anything to offer an employer. If they don't have the experience, they don't have the qualifications. And I saw myself as that young man at the age of 15, straight after being expelled. So I went and approached a local plumber who just started his own business. He was 25, he was a one-man band. And I said, listen, I need to prove myself to someone. Can I come and work for you for free to learn the trade, learn the business? And when I'm 16, in exchange for that, you were going to put me through college and then start paying me. And I don't recommend everyone should do it for a year for free, because they were weird circumstances where I was meant to be at school anyway. But for people that are starting out, go to an employer and offer them, you know, a month's worth of free work, and go in there and start half an hour early, finish half an hour late, work through your breaks, learn the industry inside out, do so much in that month that the employer can see how hard you've worked, how much you want it, make the rest of them look like they were at working at 50%. And I guarantee the right employers will sense this and they will go, wow, we need to keep that guy. And it just helps to give you a competitive edge. Once again, thinking outside the box, doing what most people won't, because they've got the arrogance to say, I won't work for free. But what else have you got to offer the employer? What do you think, that they should just give it to you for your own, for nothing? Like, show these people how much you want it. That's how I've always operated in my mindset. And you know, I think people really should consider doing it, because it will help you get ahead. I take everything internally now. I was a kid that blamed every single person for why my life wasn't where it should be up until the point of 15, when I got sick of hearing my own excuses. And I said, right, I'm going to take control now. So people can just take that, right? And as I say, things aren't fair, but that doesn't matter. But you can get ahead if you do it this way, because I've done it and it works.
And so that's a really good point to discuss. You have done it. You've had that hands-on experience. You've worked your way up. You're now the boss of your own business. How has that affected you as a boss now? If you had had a more traditional route, whatever that may be, to being CEO, does that mean that you would be doing things differently? Do you think your business plan is more creative as a result?
I think that it's both helped me and restricted me at the same time by coming up actually doing the job physically itself. Because obviously at 15, I was an apprentice all the way to 18 when I was a qualified plumber. At 19, I obviously went on to do a private gas course where I took out a loan and studied. And that got me the elevated position of £38,000 when I was only 19 by, you know, continuing to grow in my field. But you know, knowing the job inside out allowed me to buy a van and just go and start doing the job, because it's an easier one in this field to be able to do that. So it really did help. And, you know, even to now, my background skills in the business, if anybody tries to pull the wool over my eyes or something doesn't go right, I know the stuff inside out. So it really did help. But growing a company now where we're almost national, you know, I've all of a sudden become this CEO. You know, 5 years ago, I was still working on the tools. So now I run a big company, and that's the bit that I've learned. Really, I've been an apprentice businessman for the last 5 years, and that maybe if I'd have learned business at school, that would have helped me in that side of it, but I wouldn't have known the product so much. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So the swings and roundabouts, I suppose. Yeah. But it's almost like you've been in a constant state of apprenticeship, appropriately enough, isn't it? Because you've been apprentice on the tools, apprentice in the TV show, and then apprentice running the business.
Yeah.
And I suppose, I don't know, I guess that for me, that points towards an attitude of being always ready to learn.
Yeah, exactly. And I was about to say, you know, I always, as a young kid, you know, I always was, yeah, I know best. I'm not listening to my mum. I'm not listening to the teachers. But actually now, I love the fact in saying that I'm a student of the game. I don't care where I get to, I will always be a student. Even though I'm a master and an expert at what I do, I'm still a student. Does that make sense? So you can claim to be an expert, but you should always be willing to learn.
And so you have already achieved so much before turning 30 even. What have you got planned next? Like, what's the next step?
So we recently launched The Social Entrepreneur as a brand and a podcast, and we want to explore that over that. I want to take internationally as my brand and become a figure to help people flourish in business.
Tell me a bit more about what is a social entrepreneur.
So the social entrepreneur was built because I saw a lot of people questioning that social media was a negative for the next generation, and how bad it's doing for people and how it's holding them back and ruining their life skills, and, you know, everybody's stuck to their phones. Well, ultimately, once again, that's just the way that it's gone. So I think that what we need is somebody out there teaching people how, you know, a man or a woman can start taking pictures of clothes and then suddenly be getting paid £5,000, £6,000, £7,000 a post, and actually build a career as an influencer, build their personal brand if they want to do speaking, motivation, talk about nutrition, fitness, you know, if they want to blow up their own personal identity or their business, and how to use social media. So we're targeting people that have done that. So actually, rather than thinking social media is a negative, understand that it is the world that we live in now, and how are we going to use it? It's a bit like a guide for all of those people that want to work in that world.
It's crazy that this industry exists now of influencers who are having pretty lavish lifestyles.
It's crazy.
Based on their social media posts.
I know, and I think, wow, you know, when you're running a big company, they make more money than you sometimes, and they're actually just taking pictures of themselves. I'm like, this is insane.
So that's a really interesting new industry that you're exploring. Mm-hmm. You've talked about your kind of lifelong attitude to learning, but also your new initiative or newish initiative is your mentoring program. Tell me a bit about that.
So that's the Joseph Valencia Academy, and that's all based around helping people or the next generation. So younger people and more established people that want to take their skill sets to the next level. I think in my career, I've done quite a bit that I'm able now to pass back down to people. I think that's important. You know, every time you climb a level in the elevator, you should send it back down to help bring them up. You know, that's very, very important. You know, I think that educating and sharing knowledge helps you grow as an individual, but it also becomes a duty to give back. And, you know, we're using the Joseph Valencia Academy to create masterminds and courses for people that haven't quite achieved what I've achieved yet, so they've still got some scope to grow. Don't get me wrong, I'm not selling it to £50 million entrepreneurs or business people, because they want, that's who I'm learning from. But, you know, it's all about that cycle. And most importantly, supporting people is something I'm very, very passionate about. I love doing. It's not work for me, you know, and I'm looking forward to watching that grow. And it's really nice to see when these people come on the mastermind and stuff, how they take action from what you've said, how they implement it, and then seeing the results off the back of it.
And just to indulge in a little bit of lay psychology here, you know, you already talked about how you didn't have a role model in the form of your father. Mm-hmm. You did in from your uncle, but do you feel that, you know, you're noticing that absence in your life as a youngster has given you the urge to give back and be a role model for others in the present
day?
Yeah,
I think most definitely. And, you know, you look at not having that, and it was hard, and you learn a lot of these lessons on your own, and you see a lot of people that don't have that. And obviously social media is a great platform now to be able to share the information, whereas, you know, when I was growing up, we didn't have the connectivity. So now people are able to jump online and see it, and I'm hoping the stuff that we put out there does have an impact, and, you know, and does actually do what Lord Sugar's book did for me. And I just believe that sometimes you could be the worst person in the world, or the most misunderstood, but all it takes is for you to hear or see one thing that can make you go, whoa. You know, I think everybody has that eureka moment where it just clicks, and now it's the time to change, if their eyes are open and they're willing to see it when it comes. Does that make sense?
That's so important, isn't it? So you're in the mentoring business. You want to help new, younger entrepreneurs. What would be the one piece of advice you could give to someone who's starting out in their career if they want to harness some of your entrepreneurial spirit?
I think set your goals and ambition big. I think that people limit themselves in where they end up in life because they don't believe they have what it takes to achieve. The mind really can either enhance you or it can hold you back, and everything goes on in here. So set your goals big, set your ambition big, be who you are. Be very transparent, own your strengths, own your weaknesses, but most importantly, execute on everything you say you're going to do, because you get out what you put in. Remember that. You get out what you put in. You put in 50%. By the time it comes out the back end, you're probably getting 30%. You put in 200%. You're lucky you get 150% out the back end, but you get out what you put in.
All right, last question then. Setting your vision big is a theme that we definitely agree is something close to your heart. Mm-hmm. Where do you see it all ending up for you? Will you be a billionaire?
I 100% believe so. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I'll put my hands up to that, but I've never known how I was going to get anywhere, right? But I've ended up there because I believed I was going to work my way to there. You know, begin with the end in mind and let the universe and let life live itself out. Trust in your destiny and follow the process.
Good thoughts. Well, listen, thank you, Joseph, for what is truly an inspirational discussion for our Career Chats series. I feel like I need to go off and start a business myself after that. Thanks for your time. Make sure to tune in next week when our career advisor is last year's Great British Bake Off finalist, Ruby Bogal. You can listen on the Michael Page website and on Audio Boom, Spotify and iTunes. To make sure you get the next episode as soon as it's available, remember, subscribe to the Career Chats podcast by hitting the subscribe button on your player. And one last favour, if you've liked what you've heard so far, why not give us a 5-star rating on iTunes? It really helps us spread the word. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Joseph, and speak to you next time.